This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run, 7:45 right now. Before we jump into the local business news, let me tell you what's coming up on The Breakfast Grill. Just after the 8 o'clock news bulletin, Julian, you're going to be speaking to Robin Lee, the CEO of Hello Gold, which is a startup platform that allows investors to buy and sell physical gold online.
That's right. Robin is a very experienced person in the gold sector because he was the ex-CFO of the gold ETF, the SPDR gold ETF, as well as an ex-CFO of the World Gold Council. So he's very much in a position to talk about the ins and outs of gold. And this app that they're trying to create will allow people to buy trade into gold with just a few ringgit, a couple of ringgit, and you can trade into gold. And that's fintech, right? Because the whole idea of fintech is to disrupt high-cost purchases of investments or anything else. So with gold, some of the other investments that you need, for example, with the SPDR gold, you need about $10,000 to get into that particular ETF.
Yeah. So this one is a lower barrier to entry, so you can just go and invest. It's just a few ringgit.
That's right. Targeting you and me, we with our small change, we can
speak for yourself,
gold.
Jules. I'm sure you're
unlike Chuang, you probably would be trading the SPDR gold because you just got 10,000 ringgit
Chuang
lying
deals
around.
Only in blocks of gold.
I only do bullion, darling.
Well, this one, would you have to take possession of the gold, the physical possession of
it? No, you don't have to because it's very hard to take possession, to melt the gold down and to take possession of 1 ringgit or 2 ringgit of gold. You buy entire gold bars and that's kept in a vault on your behalf by the platform. And I guess this company, Hello Gold, is trying to mobilize what he says is about $400 billion in current accounts that are doing nothing right now. So they can obviously spare some of those small change into buying gold.
Yeah, can I just say, in the best spirits of democratizing currencies and the value of money, the interesting thing about this particular app is that if you keep it in the system and you don't take physical, you can't take physical, but if you keep it in the system, it adopts the attributes of money. You can transfer it, you can leverage it, you can send it around. You see a monthly balance at the end of the month. So it's got all the interesting characteristics of money. But
absolutely.
It's just, but it's gold.
That's what they say about bitcoins as well. And that is a story that's still kind of unfolding, whether they'll get the regulatory support or even the support of the people to trade in Bitcoin. But going back to Hello Gold, I mean, you're very right, Chuang, because there is a way to monetize it because they are working with banks to recognize this as some sort of a collateral. In fact, the banks would give you about 70% loan to value. I don't want to spoil the
It sounds fascinating. I'm curious to know more. Let's find out more with Robin Lee, the CEO of Hello Gold, coming up in about 20 minutes or so. But first, the Domestic Trade Cooperatives and Consumerism Ministry says that the weekly retail price of petrol and diesel will now be announced every Wednesday. And this is because they had earlier announced that they were going to move from a monthly system to a weekly system. They're going to start this next Wednesday on the 29th.
I think we're moving closer and closer to a fully floated petrol price system, don't you think?
I think so. And I think it's good because this whole price discovery thing and 1 month in between price increases or decreases is too unsettling. And, you can't plan ahead well enough. So if you're an efficient provider and if you've got a finger on the market, you can actually make it happen. And I just want to point out, the margins for petrol stations is so small on petrol sales, right? Diesel and petrol sales. The money is to be made on ancillary income. So if you're efficient, if you innovate enough, you can still make money.
From the touch-and-go commissions
touch
and
go
the granola bars.
And selling granola bars and all kinds of...
And water.
It's very much the same thing with low-cost airlines. They don't necessarily make money on ticket sales, but they make money on everything else, right?
Yeah.
Baggage and food.
Yeah,
and
judging
lemak.
By the kind of price fares under Mata and Mars.
Yeah.
I mean,
Malaysia Airlines, I'm sure...
Business
I'm sure.
class to Hong Kong was 1,300 ringgit.
Do you know
return.
What I mean? Right? They can't be making money on that route, yeah?
Yeah, so there has to be the auxiliary income that they're looking at. But is this a good move for consumers? You're talking about for a free float system for consumers, and I spoke about this with Han a little earlier, we are of that mentality where we expect certain kinds of subsidies.
Well, those days are gone.
Those days are gone, but can we make that mindset shift?
You'll be forced, right? And if you can't afford to drive a car, then you have to migrate to public transport, which is already there in the form of the MRT. And
I think that the first step was when the government removed those subsidies when they wanted to rationalize petrol prices, because the government couldn't bear the cost of subsidies anymore. But what they moved on to was something kind of weird that did not allow the petrol dealers or the petrol distributors to move freely. But now, actually, when the government is starting to move towards a fully floated system, the Petrol Dealers Association have come up in arms disagreeing with this move, because they say that this will lead to fewer suppliers and therefore that's bad for consumers.
Well, if you're efficient and you innovate, why not? You can make a fist of it.
Well, they're saying that the smaller petrol providers will die out. They just cannot compete, because they're saying that this weekly fuel price revision could lead to a price war, and between them, only the biggest companies will survive. And I think that's just a handful of that, say, four or five.
So that's probably the reason why...
Price war equals the competition, right?
Exactly.
I haven't known a time when competition was bad for consumers.
Precisely.
So this is really the perennial question of whether you want to protect the suppliers or producers or the consumers. I mean, we see it in the retail sector, whether you want to allow more hypermarkets into the country to kill off the mom and pop store. It's also a question of whether you want to pay for cheaper goods. And this is the case here.
To quote John Travolta in Pulp Fiction, Exacto Mundo.
But you know,
was that from the movie? No,
yeah, I think so.
For us consumers, for those of us pumping petrol at these stations, the price of this would be based on the price of crude oil, right?
That's
and
right.
It's allegedly going up. So we've seen the lows that it hit last year, and now it's on the uptrend, according to most analysts.
Well, it went from $46 in November last year to about $56 a few weeks ago, and then it's come back down to about $50, $51. So it's very volatile.
So even though this is adjusted on a weekly basis, consumers would likely be paying more for petrol in the future just based on oil prices.
Oh, yeah, because those subsidies are not removed.
Maybe not. I mean, the subsidies are not there, but perhaps the distributive competition will bring down prices and make it a little bit more efficient,
yeah,
because now there is that time lag.
If you make your station attractive, you've got lots of nice stuff. And I've been to Thailand. The petrol stations are amazing. They've got all kinds of things. They've got shopping, they've got retail, garments, coffee, food. You know, they've even got sushi in their convenience store. So it's,
wow.
I don't know whether I want to.
but it is what it is. And people go there, and the margins there are great. The markets and the petrol are not great.
Okay, so you make money on the retail.
Yeah.
There is also this very interesting case of the position of the Malaysian Competition Commission on this petrol price cap. And they're saying that it is a good thing because it will result in a more competitive market, but they like the price cap. But, you know, there is that case by MyCC against PIAM, right?
Yeah.
The General Insurers Association, where what they agreed between the general insurers and the mechanics was a 25% discount, which effectively is a price cap. But MyCC did not agree with that.
Oh, so perhaps a double standard here.
There is that
inconsistency
that's going on there,
yes,
which would be interesting to get a comment out of.
Okay, well, let's keep an eye on that. But moving on to other stories, again, GTF 2017, or the Global Transformation Forum, is ongoing, and that's dominated headlines both on the general news and the business pages this morning. Taking a look at what Prime Minister Datuk Seri Najib Razak said. He said Malaysia is firmly on the path to become a high-income nation, and that the middle-income trap is no longer an issue. This is after the introduction of the National Transformation Programme, the NTP.
Shouldn't validation and praise come from an independent third party and not the person himself? I mean, just wondering, right?
Well, there is that, but there is also a question of what if you achieve a high income status, what does it mean to
you,
right?
It's got to be taken into perspective, because the truth of the matter is most Malaysians are suffering through very tough times now. Costs are rising, incomes are stagnant, productivity is poor, and sentiment is rock bottom.
But so it's
one thing having a high salary, it's another thing meeting your monthly obligation.
But let's look at the numbers, right? Let's look at the numbers. Mm-hmm. What's been announced by the government? They say that under the NTP, under the National Transformation Program, they've created 1.8 million jobs. Over a million of that were high-paying jobs. They say the gross national income has gone up by almost 50%, and that through BRIM they have provided relief to households. More than 7 million households, by providing them some kind of relief through a cash give out.
BRIM is not salary. BRIM is a one-off payment. Okay, it's not going to give you the wherewithal to weather the rest of the year. Just want to point out.
Well, BRIM is a kind of social safety net.
It is, but it's, you know, it's a one-off payment. It's a
Which is reflected. I think it's beyond just the income. When you want to define yourself as a so-called high-income nation, I think it's good to have some degree of indicators, which probably were formulated by the guys at World Bank, and they came up with a number and saying that if you achieve this number, you become a high-income nation. But I think there should be other things accompanying that kind of status. And what you want is to live in a country which has got all those things that are aspirational and desirable. For example, good environmental standards, high-speed internet. I mean, my internet just broke down earlier on. I don't know if I want to live with this kind of thing, even if I have a high income.
Well, can I just, on the point of the internet, I think we've got pretty good speeds, but the price is the issue, right? But equally,
I don't know if the speeds are reliable and consistent. Well,
if you have a high-rise building, you can offer time.com and you've got 500 megs per second. It's fantastic, right? But the price is just too burdensome.
Yeah, so it's all about accessibility, not intermittent high speeds and low speeds. Smoking ban, I think we are implementing that. Good public transportation, I think.
Well, high-income nation also has good institutions. Do we have good institutions?
So you're looking at all the other elements, not just the
That's, you know, right. I don't think it's just a number.
Dollar figure at That's the right. end of the day. I also want to point out that a couple of days ago, IDEAS, the think tank, the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, they made a comment which is the opposite of what the Prime Minister is saying. They said, in fact, that Malaysia is severely off track from its Vision 2020 income goal. They're questioning, can we even still achieve this aspiration by 2020? Because in their calculation, the average income per person in Malaysia had shrunk by 15% in the last 3 years, since 2013 to 2016.
I think it's got to do with the performance of the ringgit. So the translation of the ringgit to the high income number is in the US dollar. So the ringgit has fallen, what, 30-40% over the last 3 years?
Right. Also yesterday at GTF, the Prime Minister announced with the founder of Alibaba, a digital free trade zone, an e-hub established to, make Malaysia an e-fulfillment hub, that's with proximity to KLIA and also, you know, with working together with Alibaba.
Good idea, I think. If you have someone in Jack Ma sponsoring this project, hopefully it will bring us benefits, and hopefully I can order stuff from somewhere like Lazada and get my goods within the hour.
Right.
So with drones or something.
Within the hour, Jules, that's really optimistic. The idea is that
Amazon has that thing.
Delivery,
right? same day delivery.
Yeah.
Maybe not the hour.
Yeah.
My standards are too high. High income standards.
They'll send your products to you by drone. That's the way of the future.
Yes.
No more dispatch boys.
Okay. Well, very quickly, let's take a look at EcoWorld International. The public tranche of EcoWorld International's IPO has been oversubscribed by 8.87 times, almost 9 times. There you go.
Can I just say, you know, the recent spate of IPOs, the retail portion is so tiny,
tiny
compared to the larger float. I think something like 2 billion shares on
offer. Irrelevant. What
it's irrelevant. It's 48 million shares available for subscription. Of course it's going to be oversubscribed.
It's only
right?
17%, Chuang. So I spoke I interviewed the CEO of EcoWorld International, Dr. Theo Leong Singh, on The Breakfast Grill last week. And I asked him, you know, why is the retail portion so small, 17%? And he said, look, after you minus the stake cornerstones and the stake that Gokoland is taking, and then Eco World Development is taking, and Tan Sri Liu is taking, at the end of the day, they came up with, they only had about 17% to play.
Have you ever been to an AGM? Have you?
Yeah, I've seen people pile sweet and sour fish onto their plates.
They've got 100 shares or 1,000 shares, and then they complain about everything. So, from a philosophical standpoint, if you're doing stakeholder management, wouldn't you just rather cater to one institutional investor who has 700 million shares or 70 million shares, rather than 3,000 guys who've got, you know, bit parts in the game. And
no, this is a whole new issue for a whole S&M episode, right?
Correct.
We got to talk about this.
Correct.
But I happen to have 1,000 shares in Eco World, the parent, so I'm entitled to 120 shares or 100 shares of EWI at ₱1.20. So for ₱120, I can attend the AGM and pile sweet and sour fish onto my plate.
Oh,
but
Joe,
this is what it's all about.
High income nation mentality,
exactly,
guys.
That's what I'm saying.
But this right to be heard at an annual shareholders meeting is the bedrock of capital markets, right? It should not be dominated by institutional investors. So it is absolutely imperative that, you know, listed companies...
It's not who, but how much.
Correct.
Free market pricing.
Must have a larger retail offering.
Okay, it's time now for the 8 o'clock news bulletin. After that, The Breakfast Grill with Robin Lee, the CEO of Hello Gold. Stay tuned right here on The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.